Welcome to SOLIDWORKS Heard, a show about tools, tips, and technology surrounding SOLIDWORKS engineering and the web. This is episode 442 for June 2nd, 2013, Hosted versus Cloud.
Well, hi, and welcome to SOLIDWORKS Heard. I'm Lugello. Well, today we're going to talk about cloud versus hosted services, and I think there's a delineation here that I don't hear in a lot of the conversations that I have with customers and friends and colleagues around engineering software and what it means to have it either hosted or basically as a cloud-based service. We've heard the buzzword since 2010, CAD on the cloud, and what does that exactly mean? And I think that's really an important thing to understand. Really what we're talking about is there's a differentiation between, let's say, a cloud service or a software as a service, as well as a platform as a service or a hosted platform. They're both off-premises solutions typically. They're no longer within a closet or an IT, you know, room down the hallway. We're actually moving them off-premises, which, you know, obviously comes with benefits and risks that you have to kind of weigh out for your business. But I wanted to mainly focus on what some of the differentiation is. Before I get started, I've been having some challenges with some of my recording hardware. I actually have two mixers I've been using since 2006, and they've been giving me some problems. The last couple times I've sat down to record, I've had some challenges trying to get the crispness that I used to have. I'm starting to get some weird sounds in there, and sometimes the devices don't even show up in my recording software. So I'm thinking that they're probably on the fritz, but I'm actually at work today trying to record through some other hardware that I have here. So I apologize for any difference in quality or the sound. But I did want to get on this topic and talk a little further on it. So let's talk first about more cloud-based services, and then we'll kind of differentiate those against hosted services. So I'll start this off with a question. When you think of a cloud service or a hosted service, what is the big thing that kind of flips in your mind? Is it Gmail? Is it whatever webmail you're using? Is it something more like a Facebook or a Google Plus? As far as a cloud-based system, a lot of these questions are really kind of muddied. And I think there's some things that are very easy to delineate. And there's other facets of these kind of off-premises services that make it really difficult to understand exactly what's being delivered. I think this is a hard topic. I've actually, in prepping for this show, I've had a hard time kind of pulling together some real defined lines of what some of these things mean. It seems to be fairly easy to talk purely on, let's say, a hosted setup as opposed to a software as a service setup, because I think a lot of these new things that are coming out today intermix a few of these things. Maybe they take a lot of the software that maybe you would run locally on a local server and they place it in a hosted server, but then maybe build a different front end for it so it's deployed via the web or, you know, displays in a browser without any plugins. These type of things make it really hard to kind of break away. Is this a pure brand new solution that's completely developed, you know, and deployed kind of as a thin client to the user over the web? Or is it just a movement of where the server sits? And I think that's really what makes it difficult. If you think in terms of hosting, and this is something that I've recently done a few times now, is that Microsoft has a thing called Windows Azure. In fact, we have a few of these out there. There's Rackspace, there's Amazon Web Services and cloud-based services where you can essentially buy a hosted server. And that hosted server could then give you X amount of space or X amount of bandwidth or whatever you end up buying to deploy, you know, something on those servers. If you look in terms of what Microsoft is doing, it's pretty interesting. They're a products and services company. That was kind of a recent, you know, kind of change in their structure of how they position themselves as a company. And Windows Azure is really their offering of a platform as a service. It offers a lot of the same things that we would buy as a local install, like server operating systems, databases, Active Directory, Exchange server, all these things that we would normally, as an IT department, let's say, We would purchase packages of software. We would install it on hardware we acquired, and we would deploy it to our users. And that's really an interesting thing. Obviously, most of that stuff we would have. Windows Azure is essentially a cloud-based platform that you can log on. You have a console that you can log on, and you can see all these things, whether you want to have, a hosted database, right? I don't have to install a server and do all this crazy business. I can just say, I need a new database. And it gives me a database, and I can start having my application write to that database. I talked a little bit about this when I deployed Enterprise PDM on Windows Azure. Now, obviously, Windows Azure doesn't have a lot of functionalities that would be specific to, PDM. But when you start looking at it, they do have the ability to create a virtual machine. So I can create a virtual server on this hosted platform, and I can install a traditional, server-based operating system. Now, all I have done by doing that is actually move the server from being on-premises to being on the Azure platform, running in a virtual machine, and now I can run all my traditional software that I would normally install on a local server. I can now install on this deployed server. And so I've, installed Enterprise PDM, the archive server, the database server. I've installed SQL, and I've actually had my client connect to Windows Azure as my server. And so my communications, obviously, over the WAN, or I could have it go through VPN. But all I've done in that case is then centralize my server. Now, you gain some things. Obviously, you can gain bandwidth because it's obviously on the backbone. It's a lot faster. In fact, my 900 megabyte download for Enterprise on that server that I deployed on Azure took roughly about a minute and a half to download. So it's a lot faster bandwidth than I would have at the office. But once it was deployed, I gained a couple of things. Number one, I didn't have to maintain that server. As far as the server OS, and things like that, I still would have to install patches. I'd still have to make sure that Enterprise was up to date. I'd still have to run all my backups, but I removed the need to maintain a server. In this case, I'm usually not worried about drives failing because, again, I'm on a multi-redundant type of scenario, but I would still have kind of the need to do all my IT activities. So I would still have to do my backup routines, and I would still want to make sure that, the server is patched and all those things. So I don't gain a tremendous amount, but again, I don't have to maintain that server worried about any hardware failures typically. So that's one benefit. Now you can imagine, what if I could go to something that, let's say, was hosted by a company and they did the same thing, but then they maintained all of the patching and updates and backups? That starts to become a little bit more service-based, right? It's more software as a service. Because you're not having to maintain the IT, even though it's remote, you start to gain some of those benefits. I put this in kind of the further extreme into more of a cloud-based application is look at something like Gmail. When you have to run, let's say, Outlook, which is your client software for email, and you're pointing that to a local Exchange server, which is another piece of hardware and software you have to maintain. Usually you'll also be having, things like Active Directory and a number of other services that are going to be running on your backbone. You have a lot of things going on. Now, you go to Gmail, and the Gmail gives you the same functionality, but if you look at it in terms of having to maintain any of it, you don't, right? You don't maintain the server that runs it. You don't have to patch it. You don't have to update it. You don't even have to worry about saving anything because everything's saved automatically. If you're in the middle of a draft and you exit out of Outlook, usually it'll save something, but it may not. In Gmail, it's never on the client. You have a stateless type of scenario where your client is just, it's working with something on the server. If the client drops off, the client can then pick up where it left off. And so in something like that, that's the pure extreme of what we just talked about, is that not only am I putting it off-premises, but I don't even have to maintain the server, the software, any of the interaction, because it's just maintained and updated automatically because it's deployed as a service. The software is the service. And so I think that's really an important thing to think about. And the other piece of this is that it starts to be more of a challenge when you start thinking of tools like this and you start putting a lot of data up there. This is the balance, right? We look at risk versus reward in this case. How much benefit am I getting out, and does it outweigh some of the risk? Obviously, putting your data up on a system that now the security and backups and all that is in their hands, not yours. Are you comfortable with that? In the event that you decide to switch services, what are your options? Can you take your data with you? Google has a thing called Google Takeout. Most of their products, you can go up there and extract your data and download it and take it with you. But that's only one piece of it. You know, if I was to put all my data in, let's say, Autodesk's, PLM 360, and I have this great system that's completely hosted and off my hands, and then all of a sudden I decide that I want to switch over to, you know, some type of Innovia product, I don't think I'm, you know, even if I can extract my data, is it even in a form I can use with another service? So you do have to kind of, you know, weigh that option. Is what is it going to cost you if you decide to move, and do you have even more lock-in than you did when you were with a CAD platform, let's say? So it can be a challenging, you know, discussion, but there's usually a lot of things that you reduce in going to a hosted or cloud-based solution when it comes to something like that. Now, if we look at something like, purely cloud-based, it really is, you know, there's a lot of reward as far as, you know, kind of worry-free, no hassle. But when it does go down, you really have no choice. And I hear a lot of this when we talk in terms of CAD on the cloud. We've seen a lot of tools start to pop up that are more in the viewing and collaboration space. You know, we've heard about GrabCAD Workbench and Sunglass.io and Team Platform. You know, they're deploying web-based, purely web-based, no plugins required, interfaces to collaborate with multiple users, share 3D data, give a 3D viewing experience, and there's nothing that's needed. So it's kind of friction-free collaboration. You just get in, you share your links out, and people are in that kind of hosted location. It's one place. You don't have to get them in your firewall. You don't have to install any special hardware. Your content is up in one centralized place, and then everyone else sees that data. And that's a big deal. But again, you know, if it is something where you're worried about moving to something down the road, or you have a lot of, you know, intellectual property up there and you now want to make sure that it's secured, and you kind of have to, you know, understand what you're getting into. With a lot of these other tools that are coming forth, you look at, you know, some of the things that Autodesk is doing, some of the stuff that SolidWorks was talking about at SolidWorks World, they're looking at being able to deploy services that they can charge kind of a monthly fee for that, you know, will either be partially due to the number of users or the amount of data, and they're basically putting you on a subscription-based service to access that information. That in itself, I think, brings a lot of worry to some people when it comes to, you know, well, what if I decide that I don't want to pay that, or maybe it's an overhead we can't afford. Again, how do I get my data, and in what form do I get my data back in? See, I think that's a lot of the big piece, I think, that people are still worried about. The other thing is that I always hear the comment when we talk about things like CAD on the cloud, you know, you have a lot of companies that are starting to come up and talk a little more about these solutions. Obviously, there are people that are already in this space, and there's a lot of people that are supposedly going to be coming into this space. So I think if you look at the web and the usage in general, and just your own computer usage, you spend a lot of time in the browser. So web-based tools seem to be something that's coming up. What you're seeing is a lot of them take the position of being a conceptual tool. It's almost like they don't want to fully commit that they're a full-blown engineering web-based application. They want to kind of take the whole conceptual part and then maybe gain some trust there before they start to really show all the things that they can do. And it's understandable because maybe it's not as much risk, right? It's not actually released software or hardware or products. It's more in that kind of, you know, we're just trying to dabble a little bit. We're trying to nail down an idea. We're not really sure yet. And so they lower the risk barrier a little bit and try and get you into these systems. But I think that's really one of the trends, or a couple of the trends that I'm starting to see with a lot of these tools, is that they're trying to kind of, you know, bite off the little conceptual area, maybe get industrial designers, mechanical engineers, people like that that still want to dabble a little bit, and then we'll try and get them comfortable there before they actually do like full-blown design there. But, you know, when I start thinking about this in terms of a lot of the things that I've been doing is, you know, for the last 3.5 years, I've been using a Chromebook. And I built my own Chromebook back when they first announced that this was coming out. And back then, people thought I was a nutbutt job. You know, they're like, you know, you're running this browser-only computer. You know, what the heck can you do with that? And honestly, at the time, there wasn't a whole heap that I could do with it. I was more interested in where it was going and how the web was developing. But it was kind of a vision of seeing more and more things that didn't rely on the local hardware as much. Now, when you look at engineers and audiophiles and those of us that really even developing, as a developer, I have, you know, 3 or 4 different types of environments that I develop for. I usually have to build those things and be able to install local databases. And there's all kinds of stuff that you're usually dabbling with. If you record audio like I do, you need somewhere to record. If you do video production, you need that. And then engineers, we have a lot of desktop-based applications. So, you know, we're the difficult group to convert. And I think as the web kind of starts to become more and more sophisticated, it really starts to kind of open your eyes. In using a Chromebook as long as I have, I've kind of seen the progression of this thing. I built my own kind of build of it on my little 9-inch, you know, netbook. And then I got one of the official Google Chrome OS Acer 11-inch. I used that for about a year. Pretty good. Again, I always run the development build, and I'm always trying to see like what's coming and some of the stuff they're working on. And then I got the Samsung, which ran on an ARM processor. That product actually ran for about a 9-hour battery life. Again, these things boot up in 6 seconds. You have a lot of the same power of the web. And I'm finding more and more as these builds come out, as the technology comes up, and more of this kind of local database and local experience, offline mode, a lot of the things that used to be a real killer for any type of online connected laptop, these things are pretty powerful. About a month ago, I got a Pixel. And again, this is a high-end Chromebook made by Google. It's got, you know, all high-end hardware, backlit keyboards, aluminum body, you know, beautiful high-density resolution screen, touch screen. There's a lot of different technologies in there, whether it's touch or the high-res screen or whatever. And after Google I/O, they started talking a lot about some of the things they were doing. And, you know, you see some of the things that they're doing with the web, and it starts to make you think what's possible. There's a couple of Chrome experiments that you know, Google had pushed out that really started to kind of open my eyes. But I got to tell you, in using a Chromebook, which it has one function that really started to fill in the gap for me, and that was I got an LTE version. And so now I have something that not only, I would say 80% of the time I'm on Wi-Fi, but that other time where I'm traveling or I'm somewhere where there's not internet, I usually can get internet. And having a device like this that is basically always connected, web-based applications start to become a real asset. They start to look a lot more like something that's, you know, kind of a key to the future of computing in general. I think there are some stopgaps and challenges, whether it's trying to deliver the best graphics or trying to have the precision that we're used to in CAD-based applications. But I think a lot of that is going to be addressed as the internet speeds get faster, as internet access gets more ubiquitous, and as the hardware and even the browser interfaces really start to come up. It's not surprising me that some of this stuff runs functionally perfect. I'm really kind of blown away by a lot of these services, like a lot of these collaboration tools, whether it's GrabCAD or Sunglass. All those things work perfect on my system. And again, I have a Chromebook that, you know, basically I don't have to keep stuff locally, and I can work with stuff on there and go to another computer, and everything's just as I left the last time. The promise is still early, but I think there's a lot that the web is doing and that speeds of the internet are doing for a lot of the challenges that used to be an issue even just 2 years ago. I'm kind of excited to see where things will go. But I got to tell you, a lot of applications that I'm using today, one of the prerequisites is it hosted? Is there a way for me to get to it without having to have anything installed locally? I hope that more you know, when we look at this kind of blending line between a hosted slash, you know, purely cloud-based application, is that they really start to look at the browser more as the interface. I'm still seeing a lot of very light frameworks. So, you know, you build this hosted solution, but then, you know, it's restricted to running on Windows and Mac, or, you know, it only runs on a mobile device, or, you know, you have to have some physical application installed for it to run. I think as long as those things are ubiquitous and they work on any platform, then it's probably all right. But I really like the idea of not having to have too many prerequisites to run software. Obviously, I would say when it comes to purely the CAD interface or purely development environments, there's things that we just can't live without. And, you know, for many of us, these will be solutions for, you know, as a secondary device. But I think for a vast majority of kind of general users, I think the web is probably the platform of the future. Well, hopefully you got a few nuggets out of that. I think there's a lot of blending between whether you're just putting something off premises or that you're actually utilizing a fully brand new solution that, you know, maybe has a whole new front end and maybe is purely web-based or a lightweight framework that's kind of talking to a cloud-based backend. I think a lot of this stuff is really gonna have a lot of movement over the next, you know, year or so. Mainly because you're starting to see a lot of the big CAD companies offer stuff that is actually, you know, deployed via the web, a vast majority of interaction that's done through a browser. And we are going to see a lot more of this, obviously, trending. You're seeing a lot of companies that made a lot of money for a long time on the desktop and on locally installed applications looking in that other direction as well. Not exclusively, but as well. So I'm really excited to see where this goes. Obviously, the whole mobile and web-based world is a growing world, and I would say if you're not an engineer or a developer or a video and audiophile, you're probably living a majority of your life on the web already. If you have any questions or comments about this episode, you can hit at the comments section or email me at lou@solidworksherd.com. Don't forget to visit the Herd at herd.solidworksherd.com and register for an account. You can follow me there or on Google+, Twitter, or Facebook by searching for SolidWorks Herd. This episode of SolidWorks Herd was sponsored by Digital Dimensions, Forward Engineering Solutions, online at www.didcad.com. Music was provided by 21 Against by means of Music Alley at musicalley.com.